it myself.
I did my part.
Did you?
Shopping, you know.
Good. Well, that's what the previous president, I meant, a little faux pox there. The current president, that's what he told us to do in a crisis, was shop.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shop around, but, I think is what he said.
There was something on the news where men are going to save the Christmas holidays this year. I don't know how.
I think I saw that movie. Wasn't that Will Ferrell?
No, actually, on the news shows, they said there was some blurb on MSNBC or something where they said that it's going to be up to the men this year to spend more money than women usually do. I don't know why.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I'm not sure why either. Maybe women are smarter and they're holding on to their money and men aren't. For whatever reason, whatever's happening is happening. And today is the 1st of December, so a lot of things happened on this day. But one of the most famous things that happened, Robin, was that Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white man on this day. Isn't that just like a woman?
I love it. I love it. She's one of my favorite heroines, I must say.
Exactly.
She's a lady. Why should she?
Exactly. Well, she was black, I think, was the issue.
Yes, I know. But,
times have changed. So you can guess what year this is, can't you, folks? Rosa Parks? What year would that have been that Rosa Parks was refusing to give up her seat? That is correct. It was 1955. Also, the first drive-in automobile service station opened on this date. By service station, I assume they mean not just for gasoline, but for repairs.
Everything else.
But I'm not sure. But what's interesting is, what other kind of service station is there? How did you used to get gas? Did you go pick it up and put it in your car from a tank? I mean, I would have thought they would always were drive-in.
Gosh.
Maybe it's the first time they put pumps on an island or something like that.
Could be. Well, you would know, wouldn't you?
Exactly. I grew up. I'm steeped in this.
but
the smell of gasoline is a boy.
All I can remember is that Back to the Future, that funny moment where the character goes back to the 50s.
Yes.
And about six or eight men come out in their service uniforms with their caps and their shining the windows and
Marty McFly service. Never saw so much service because the service is gone. I've done a speech at Toastmasters called There Ain't No Customer Service.
Uh-huh.
And one of the examples I use is that we now wait on ourselves. We not only pump our own gas, we now our own cashier. We put the credit card in.
Right.
Except in the state of New Jersey. Where
really?
It is illegal to pump your own gas in New Jersey.
Oh, I'll drive there.
Exactly. Every time I go to New Jersey, I'm passing through and I get out of my car and go to pump gas and they come out and slap you. They would if I kept going, but I then remember, service is still alive. In any case, it's also Woody Allen's birthday today, 1935. I liked him before I knew he was a child molester, you know.
I prefer Lou Rawls, who was born also on this day in 1935.
Actually, I shouldn't say he's not a child molester.
No, Lou Rawls is not.
No, I meant Woody Allen's. But
right.
But he did decide to have an affair and then marry his wife's adopted daughter.
Oh, I think that's,
and there's just something
horrible.
Disgusting about
yeah,
that.
I don't like to see Woody Allen movies because of that.
Well, you know, I think he's taken a hit at the box office. But
it's un appetitli, as the Germans would say.
Don't get you started. In any case, we've got a lot of things to cover this evening,
yes.
And we're going to start with some of the lighter side of the news. I say it's light, but we're going to be discussing death here right off the bat, so I guess it's not that light, except that we're not getting into heavy politics right away. So, the oldest person in the world died, Robin, this past week.
Oh, my.
Edna Parker was 115 years old. Well, it had to happen, didn't it?
115?
115, they say. This is, of course, run by the Guinness Book of World Records.
Mm-hmm.
And she's held the title for over a year, which is interesting, because when you're that old, you think you might lose that title in a hurry.
It longer than that.
Well, no, let's face it. If you're 114, how long can you live? So
right.
It could be that more than any other record, that one passes on to someone else more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably also the only record Guinness has that doesn't continue to go up. In other words, if you're eating the world's largest hot dog, the next one has to be bigger or you don't make the records book.
Right.
But when the oldest person in the world dies, if the youngest person is 113, hey, that's the record now.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how long, well, anyway. Age.
Well, finish that thought.
Aging.
You wonder how long. Well, oh, maybe you didn't want to say it. You're wondering how long you're going to live, aren't you?
Yes, I do. And I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, I'm
but I'm
not
younger than I think I am.
Yes. And there's another death that's worth discussing here.
Yes.
And that is that a Walmart worker died this weekend. And you know about this story, Robin.
Yes, you told me.
So they opened the Walmart on Long Island. I believe it might have been Valley Stream. At least it was reported from Valley Stream when I saw the headline. And there were 2,000 people waiting outside this Walmart. Now, I can't believe that 2,000 people would show up at a Walmart at 6 a.m., but they did. And when the poor sap that was charged with opening the door opened the door, the crowd surged forward. There's that word. And tore the doors off the hinges. These are, you know what, how big those glass doors are, and they're pretty heavy. Tore the doors off. No, I'm sure they weren't. Mm-hmm. Tore the doors off the hinges. Trampled this guy, and the other employees tried to get in there and save him, and some of them barely got out with their lives. A pregnant woman was knocked down, but she's okay. So is the baby. But he died. The employee was trampled to death. Then they went to close the Walmart a little later. Mm-hmm. Like within a half an hour when the police got there, and shoppers were incensed, arguing that they got there the day before. Mm-hmm.
And we're waiting in line.
How can you take away my shopping?
Good God.
But so what's interesting is the aftermath of this. This is being much discussed in the last 24 or 48 hours on the air, particularly on Monday, since all the talk shows go back on the air on Monday morning.
And this was Black Friday. That this
It happened on Black Friday. Mm-hmm. That's correct, on last Friday after Thanksgiving. And I was listening to a conservative talk show on the way in tonight. Austin Hill is on the air here in the evenings, and he's a pretty rabid conservative talk show host. And to him, it all comes down to personal responsibility. Apparently, people are worried that somebody's going to sue Walmart over this. Mm-hmm. And so he believes that people must take personal responsibility for their behavior. So he had a guy on, a lawyer on, who was making the case that I didn't hear the first part. He might have. Let's imagine he was making the case that Walmart should have seen this coming, which I don't agree with, but you could make the case, and that it's a dangerous situation. You don't simply open the doors when there's 2,000 people outside because you can predict what will happen, might be his argument. Mm-hmm. And Austin Hill would have the standard reaction that Republicans and conservatives have to this kind of thing, which is you defend the organization, the big business, and you say people should take personal responsibility. He was trying to get the lawyer to say that everybody that trampled this guy is personally responsible for it. Hmm. And I don't know if you have a view on this case.
Well, I think when we talked about this before, you talked about mob mentality, and I've never been in a big crowd, but you'd mentioned that it's something that's really an extraordinary thing that's unlike any other.
Yeah,
and
it is. I can think of two examples that have been in the news, and one example I was involved in personally. So you may remember. So one of the solutions people have said we should come to from this is the possibility of banning these big sales on Black Friday early in the morning that attract thousands of people with these big giveaways, because you're setting yourself up for trampling somebody, possibly. Mm-hmm. This goes back to 1979. That's what I'm reminded of in Cincinnati. Some of you may remember that there was a Who concert. I was not there, but my favorite band, and they've always attracted a crowd, but the Rolling Stones, any band would have attracted a crowd. They had general admission, or what they used to call festival seating. And in this festival seating concert in Cincinnati, they had the entire floor was open seating, and so not reserved seats, but
how
I guess there were
there?
Seats. Well, a basketball arena would seat about 17,000, 18,000. There were probably 3,000 to 4,000 outside waiting to get in for the festival seating. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Festival seating means it was all general admission. Mm-hmm. So as many people as got there early were waiting. And, of course, they're going to dash for the good seats. It's even a bigger rush than Black Friday would be with a sale at Walmart. And 11 people were trampled to death that day. And festival seating was generally banned in most arenas after that incident. Mm-hmm. What was interesting, too, was that once you get the 17,000 people in, the police knew people had died outside and some of their friends knew, but most of the people inside were totally unaware of it. And so they had to make a decision, and they decided that the concert should go on. This is the promoter and the police and everybody, because if you cancel, you get a stampede of some sort, or angry fans. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even tell the Who that people had died. So they gave their performance. They came off stage, and they said, we have to tell you something. 11 people were killed before your show because of the seating arrangements. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty shaken by it. So that's the other incident. And they did, in fact, change the rules. No one said, the fans are responsible for stomping these people. No, it's a mob. And you could say, well, people shouldn't join in a mob. That's where the third story comes in. Mm-hmm. In the mid-70s, early to mid-70s, I used to go to Watkins Glen for the races. This was before NASCAR was a big deal. They held two races there a year, the Grand Prix. And, of course, in those days, there was only one Grand Prix in the United States. There was a Grand Prix circuit, and they raced in a variety of European cities, and then one race here in the U.S. There was also a Canadian Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. And that was held at Watkins Glen Racetrack, as was the Can-Am races.
Now, where was that?
Watkins Glen is tucked in the Finger Lakes, at the base of one of the Finger Lakes, and it's up on a hilltop, almost a small mountaintop. It's just rolling hills. But there's one road up and one road down, essentially, and these races attract 150,000 fans on race weekends. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you get there early and you leave late, or you sit in traffic. And I used to go down for these races. And one year they announced that at midnight they were going to open the pits. Now, the race crews work on the cars all night long. The first time ever, they were going to open the pits and fans could walk through. And so nobody had ever had an opportunity to do that. So thousands of people who were camped out all night went at midnight. Now, people drink and sit around the campfires and party, and it's a fairly wild scene. And so there were some rowdy people standing in line. Mm-hmm. But the mistake they made, instead of opening a narrow gate like the pair of doors at Walmart,
right,
they opened a big wide gate that allows cars to go through. It was a swinging gate, and they opened it all at once, and the crowd surged forward. And we were tightly packed right before then. There was no way to move, or it would have been hard to get out of the crowd. And then the crowd surged forward, and I was just grateful I didn't fall down. But there was no way I could have resisted the momentum of moving forward. I didn't have a sensation I was moving forward. I was not pressing forward. I was being carried along by the feel of it. So this idea that Austin Hill has, that somehow the mob outside of Walmart should have controlled themselves. No, look up the definition of a mob. It's not able to control itself.
I wonder how you'd fix it. I mean, how you would have them open electronically or something?
Well, the smaller door it's like water. If you open, a big gate on a dam, the water will rush out and flood the area below or wash it out, the dirt along the path. Whereas if you open it slowly, it will trickle out, and it's a controlled release then. Right. So I guess what I would say is they should have had a very small gate. That was my determination that night in the 70s, is that they should not have opened this big wide gate. They should have had a small gate and let people through a few at a time. But at Walmart, apparently the fans were so rabid, these customers were so rabid that even though it was a small gate, they pushed through. Anyway, it's hard to know, what you're going to do about that stuff.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. Anyway, I don't agree that there should be a lawsuit. On the other hand, if they stop this policy of having these kinds of sales, I mean, that's what they did with rock concerts, is they sold tickets differently so that the fans wouldn't be put in that position where they could crush each other again.
But they want to generate the excitement so that they get the sales up. And I was surprised to hear that although the sales were up yesterday on Black Friday, still the market tanked today.
That's true. Most people thought the sales would be down. Sales were up. Mm-hmm. What they're saying is a lot of people have already spent their money for Christmas and they aren't going to keep spending. I'm not sure that's going to be right. We'll see. But yes, the market did tank big time. And of course, I'm sure we can blame Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton for that. We'll get to that in the next segment.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
You indeed could. We are back on the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio here in Fairfax, Virginia. And it's the Finn Man and Robin. So, Robin, there was another story in the news that I thought was interesting last week, the end of last week. They settled the case of the woman who posed as a 16-year-old boy out, this was in Missouri.
Oh, yes.
And on MySpace. And then she taunted or wooed a troubled teenage girl and then broke up with him, all pretending to be this kid from school. Mm. And that girl then committed suicide. And in the messages, the mother who did this, her name is Lori Drew. She's 49 years old and lives in O'Fallon, Missouri. Well, I know O'Fallon because I used to live in Missouri. Mm. And she took on this fictional identity of Josh Evans, and she told him at one point that she shouldn't even be allowed. She shouldn't even be alive or something. Whatever she said to him, I forget the exact quote. Mm-hmm. But clearly, she helped drive this girl to suicide.
So as the character, she became the character,
yes.
Josh.
Yeah.
And said to this poor young woman.
Yes. Now, forget the fact that a 49-year-old woman should be mature enough that you're not trying to play with the minds of a 16-year-old. Oh. You should be supporting kids, not humiliating them. Mm-hmm. This girl used to be her daughter's best friend, so it was kind of a revenge thing. I mean, it's just so...
It's sick.
And she knew that the girl had a tendency to be depressed, have depression. Mm. It's very sick. It turns out that she was only guilty of minor charges. And so three misdemeanors. She was found guilty of three misdemeanors, no felonies.
Huh.
Well, you know, it's pretty hard to pin things on people. But what this brings me to is, as we think about the wired world or the online world or cyberspace, as we call it, people, until you have firsthand experiences with it, you don't realize how real it can be. There's a very famous old story that when I teach an internet course, I always have my students read, and it's the article. It's an article that was published in a paper, in a magazine, I mean, and it was called A Rape in Cyberspace. Hmm. And in it, these characters inhabit this world, and everybody takes on a different character. And these are real people playing characters in this fictitious world online. This goes back 20 years ago. And one person in the community was a good programmer. Now, there's always an avatar, somebody who's in charge of everything, and they're supposed to do all the programming, and they can give you special powers, and they can do the various things, and it's all done in the programming of the thing. It's a text-based. This is going back when it was just text-based. There were mm-hmm. no images at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you describe who you are and what you're doing and all of that. And this person learned how to program, break in and break the code, and ended up taking over and giving himself special powers, etc., and he ended up raping one of the characters, right, in online. So it was a cyber rape.
Mm-hmm.
And it devastated the community because they had this sense of trust and all. But when people read the story in the magazine who didn't have any online experience and weren't part of an online community where they felt this investment,
They
said, oh, come on, that's not a real rape. What are we talking? And of course, it isn't a real rape.
Right.
But the question is, how real are our experiences in cyberspace and our relationships in cyberspace?
Well, evidently very real. Real enough for one young lady to commit suicide.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so this storyline comes up from time to time. And I'm reminded of it again with this most recent example. Whenever my students say that it isn't, because mostly my students, even though they have online experience, they don't have usually experiences taking on characters and being investing in an online community. They do instant messaging and text mm-hmm. messaging and email, and that's their mm-hmm. many of them. That's their the extent of their experience with cyberspace.
I don't really understand text messaging. I've never tried it.
Well, it
seems laborious.
It is, but those kids have little fingers, you know. Actually, they all say, "Oh no, you can get pretty fast at it." I can still talk a heck of a lot faster than they can type words, which is why they abbreviate. So they say the entire message may just be K, one letter, for okay. K, yeah. So. Anyway, when they talk about cyberspace and they say that, oh, this isn't real, it's imaginary, I say, well, okay, imagine this. You're married, mm-hmm. and your spouse, you come home one night, and you discover your spouse is online, not just flirting with somebody, but having cyber sex. They're typing in messages saying what they want to do to someone else, and there's someone else on the other end typing back. I said, now that's not really cheating, right? Because it's just in online. They're like, hold the phone or the computer keyboard. And then they rethink what they just decided about the fact that you can't really have a rape in cyberspace. You can't really have sex in cyberspace either. But most people say that that's cheating.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can envision it. They can, yes, I think that is cheating. I mean, I suppose like phone sex. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's right, because what it is it's an emotional investment in someone else. Mm-hmm. That's a no-no if you're married. At least that's what I'm led to understand. I'm not currently married. But I was definitely led to understand that when I was married. Believe me, she who must be obeyed made it clear.
Well, no, I'm not married either.
That's true. The lovely Robin is not married. So let's see. Where else do we want to go with this? So... Barack Obama he's been giving speeches almost every day.
Yes.
My gosh, are we ever going to be rid of this guy?
Oh, I don't want to be rid of him.
I'm excited
by the whole experience.
Me too. I'm excited by having a president that can string together complete sentences.
Oh, no kidding.
So Obama did an interesting thing, and some people would say that it was PR, but on Thanksgiving, I think it was Thanksgiving, maybe it was on Wednesday, I think it was Thanksgiving morning, he took his wife and children and went to essentially to a soup kitchen and slung hash.
No, I didn't know.
Now,
that.
It might have been a food bank and they were filling food. But the point is, he took his kids to volunteer to help the less fortunate in the
community area
of Chicago, mm-hmm. because he said he wanted his kids to realize that although we have a lot, we know that some people don't have some, but it's a time, you know. You got to learn to give back.
Yeah.
And I just thought that, you know, he's a great parent for a socialist, you know?
A Groucho Marxist.
A Groucho Marxist. I like it. I like it. And let's see, the space shuttle Endeavour touched down in California yesterday. They had bad weather. It was on Sunday.
Stormy weather.
There you are. It was stormy weather in Florida, and so they decided they went to sunny California. And, of course, this made the papers here, the picture made the papers today. And until the Challenger disaster was 86, so we kind of got over that. But then when the Columbia blew up on reentry, we now don't take the space shuttle for granted anymore.
No, it's true.
So... that was news. And let's see. Oh, well, this item's right here next to it, physically next to it in the paper. Sarah Palin was in Georgia. She was in Georgia stumping for Saxby Chambliss, mm-hmm. the current senator. And I think he's going to hold on to his Senate seat. He doesn't deserve to, but he's going to, in part because it's Georgia and he's the sitting senator.
And the state went to... McCain.
Yes, but it all comes down to turnout. If enough people turn out on either side, this election can be won. This will be very low turnout election mm-hmm. because it's a makeup election. It's a it's a runoff election. A very small percentage of voters will decide this, and the question is, will enough Democrats be energized? Will enough blacks be energized to go out and vote?
Well, Obama decided not to go, and Gore and Clinton did go down, but I don't think it's enough firepower, do you?
They're using a recording that Obama made and calling people, trying to get him to go out, but he did not go down himself. You know, there's two ways to look at this. One is he didn't want to put his presidential prestige on the line.
Right.
Unless he was sure he could win it, and they must have made a determination that he couldn't win it. That's mm-hmm. one angle. The other possibility is simply that he's decided that since he's in transition and he's promised to be a post-partisan president, be a little different than usual, his campaign is over.
And he's already won.
He's not going to go down and immediately get partisan and political.
Plus, thought of that?
People could say, gee, don't you have quite a bit to think about with your transition? You're going down to squeeze out one more Senate seat.
Yeah.
He could be criticized for it. There are very serious problems. So for whatever reasons, combinations of reasons, he decided to focus on what's going on at hand. And won't
he have sort of a working sort of filibuster-proof with the moderate Republicans?
Yeah, it won't be so much. Essentially, yes. It won't be so much filibuster proof, but if his policy or the bill he wants passed is centrist enough, he'll have 60 votes and the conservatives won't be able to stop it as long as he can bring over a few votes. So, yes, he'll get his way on most things anyway.
Okay.
So, we were going to take a short break here, and then when we come back, we are going to move on to, well, I guess we'll probably still talk a little bit about the election, because the heavyweights of the Social Security team were announced, and Hillary is resigning her seat in the Senate and is moving in. Believe that. Women are still in that position. It's just so hard to believe. I can't take it.